Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 13th day of May 2020. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host, but it sounds a little different right now. It's because I'm using a different microphone hooked into my computer because I wanted to have a co-pilot for today just because he knows one of the principles that we're going to talk about, and he knows a lot about what goes on in Capitol Hill. Returning champion Brian Darling. You're hitting Scotland, Brian. How's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to being able to get back out on the golf course, keeping my distance from you, which I think is always a good policy, but going back to golf. The last time we golfed, I won, and that was the first time I'd ever beaten you, and you unleashed a pandemic on the world to protect your fragile ego from ever facing that shame again. So I want to get back out there.
But other than that,
I'm good. Are you how are you holding up with the kids?
I'm doing okay. It's been a struggle with all the homeschooling, but we're getting by. It's a challenge.
I know you've been telling me what you've been telling me off air and how insane you're going.
Yeah, I am not using words that we can use in a podcast.
Yeah, you can use any words you want. Words. Know that your wife could listen to them.
Right.
And then you got to sleep at some point. So good luck to you there. It's going to be a normal show. Just Brian's going to be along with us because he used to work for Rand Paul, and Rand Paul made big news. We're going to talk about Rand Paul's statement to Anthony Fauci and the insanity of just not opening schools, not even next year. California is talking about staying locked down for an additional 3 months in Los Angeles County, which is nuts. And the Democrats introduced a budget. Oh, no, wait, my bad. Not a budget, a bailout bill, a $3 trillion bill that has goodies for every one of their constituencies. No Republicans were harmed in the drafting of the HEROES Act because they weren't consulted whatsoever. And still, the progressive wing of the party is bitching that it's not enough. But as it is Wednesday, as we always do, we have to play the pre-recorded sponsor ad where I have a phone call with Ronnie McMullen, and he's a good guy, and so here it is. All right, joining me now on the phone is the proprietor of AncientLifeOil.com, where I get all of my CBD oil that I take every day and really helps me with those aches and pains, and it helps me sleep a lot. It's Ronnie McMullen. How are you doing, Ronnie?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Derek?
I am doing wonderfully, and I'm sleeping better, and I just feel so much better thanks to the CBD oil there that you have there. Tell us about what goes on in CBD oil, because you can't go into any convenience store or gas station or grocery store anymore without somebody selling CBD oil on the counter, behind the counter. There's a huge difference in quality and effect.
Well, huge. When you're talking about quality and effect, you're absolutely right. Because if you get the gas station brand, and I'm not trying to dog my competitors because that's not a great way to go. But on the same token, if it's not the good stuff, then it's not going to work. So then you're going to be one of those people say, yeah, I tried CBD. It doesn't work. No, it really works. It works for inflammation. It works for anxiety. It works for all kinds of good stuff. They're finding so many clinical trials are being run right now. Pharmaceuticals are running with it. So it's really awesome. But here's where I want to go. If you want the good stuff, if you want the Ferrari, the Ancient Life Oil, okay, you go to ancientlifeoil.com and know that I just lowered my prices between 15 and 25%, and it's going to stay that way. And if you go to subscriptions, you can get even more money off if you just get it every month, because some people need this every month just for their body to hang out and be groovy. So ancientlifeoil.com and 15 to 25% off everything, and it's going to stay that way.
You try it once and you'll be a convert. Trust me on that. They got me. They got me. Ronnie McMullen, if you enter promo code Derek at checkout, you get free shipping on top of it all. You're doing the Lord's work out there. I want to thank you.
No, it's wonderful because I always have happy customers.
Don't forget to enter promo code Derek at checkout and click apply for free shipping on top of great savings. Yeah, I love Ronnie McMullen and that CBD oil. Seriously, I'm sitting here. Brian, we're on a video chat. I'm holding up my CBD oil right there from ancientlifeoil.com. I really do use this stuff. Okay, Brian, let's get into Rand Paul before we play the audio. You worked for Rand Paul. You know Rand Paul. You've golfed with Rand Paul. A lot of people who listen to Rand Paul, follow Rand Paul, are naturally skeptical of government. Does this, well, let's play it right now. And I want to know if, as we listen to this, do you think it plays beyond the base that is already Rand Paul fans?
With regard to going back to school, one thing that was left out of that discussion is mortality. I mean, shouldn't we at least be discussing what the mortality of children is? This is for Dr. Fauci as well. You know, the mortality between 0 and 18 in the New York data approaches zero. It's not going to be absolutely zero, but it almost approaches zero. Between 18 and 45, the mortality in New York was 10 out of 100,000. So really, we do need to be thinking about that. We need to observe with an open mind what went on in Sweden, where the kids kept going to school. The mortality per capita in Sweden is actually less than France, less than Italy, less than Spain, less than Belgium, less than the Netherlands, about the same as Switzerland. But basically, I don't think there's anybody arguing that what happened in Sweden is an unacceptable result. I think people are intrigued by it, and we should be. I don't think any of us are certain when we do all these modelings. There have been more people wrong with modeling than right. We're opening up a lot of economies around the U.S., and I hope that people who are predicting doom and gloom and saying, oh, we can't do this, there's going to be a surge, will admit that they were wrong if there isn't a surge, because I think that's what's going to happen. In rural states, we never really reached any sort of pandemic levels in Kentucky and other states. We have less deaths in Kentucky than we have in an average flu season. It's not to say this isn't deadly, but really, outside of New England, we've had a relatively benign course for this virus nationwide. And I think the one-size-fits-all, that we're going to have a national strategy and nobody's going to go to school, is kind of ridiculous. We really ought to be doing it school district by school district, and the power needs to be dispersed because people make wrong predictions. And really, the history of this, when we look back, will be of wrong prediction after wrong prediction after wrong prediction, starting with Ferguson in England. So I think we ought to have a little bit of humility in our belief that we know what's best for the economy. And as much as I respect you, Dr. Fauci, I don't think you're the end all. I don't think you're the one person that gets to make a decision. We can listen to your advice, but there are people on the other side saying there's not going to be a surge and that we can safely open the economy. And the facts will bear this out. But if we keep kids out of school for another year, what's going to happen is the poor and underprivileged kids who don't have a parent that's able to teach them at home are not going to learn for a full year. And I think we ought to look at the Swedish model, and we ought to look at letting our kids get back to school. I think it's a huge mistake if we don't open the schools in the fall. Thank you.
All right, so that was Rand Paul talking to Lord and Savior Anthony Fauci. Hallowed be thy name. You're not allowed to criticize or disagree with him in any way, shape, or form. I don't remember his name being on the ballot in 2016, but again, it must have been because he is now in control of the United States government and economy. Now, to my question, Brian, Rand Paul, one of the things that people are saying about him, truther, he's one of these conspiracy theorists. Is Rand Paul a conspiracy theorist? You know him, I don't.
He is not.
He's not. That's
it. Definitely not a conspiracy theorist. I mean, he always gets accused of being a conspiracy theorist because pretty much all libertarians are accused of being conspiracy theorists. But
a lot of libertarians are conspiracy theorists.
Some are.
But, okay, so does this play beyond? Because I'm listening to it and I'm thinking, yeah, you know, the weird thing about this pandemic, not that we have anything to go on. I wasn't alive in 1917, 1918 for the Spanish flu pandemic. But the weird thing about this pandemic is that if you watch one story or watch one package or read a story, you listen to one expert, you think we're all going to die. it's over. That, my God, the blood is coagulating in these otherwise healthy people and clotting, causing strokes in people who are 30 years old. What chance do I have? And then you read another story where it's, well, there's nothing to worry about unless you're 85 years old. I don't see what the big deal is. You can have, there's such a wild disconnect between the coverage that nobody seems to be saying, yes, this is bad, but it's not that bad. It's not that, you know, it's somewhere in the middle, and it's not really all that out of the ordinary. Rand Paul seems to kind of be coming at it from that perspective, which is why I think it sounds foreign to so many people who aren't engaged in politics. The left is used to hearing the sky is falling. The right is used to hearing that there's nothing to this. So where is the constituency for what Rand Paul said today?
Well, if you listen to the whole exchange, I think he made a reasonable point. He said that he had it. I mean, he's somebody who had the coronavirus. He's somebody who believes that once you have it, there's a much less likelihood you can get it again. I mean, we don't know. We haven't seen what's happened over a long period of time, but he's under the impression that once you get it, it's likely that you can't get it again because you have the antibodies and you're protected from getting it again. And so he was making the point that you have a lot of people that have had it. And when you have Fauci basically saying that schools aren't going to be able to open this fall, you know, we're going to be shut down right through next year. I don't think that's based in science. I mean, he doesn't know. Dr. Fauci has no idea what's going to happen over the summer, no idea what's going to happen in the fall. And I think Rand Paul's point was we need to be have our eyes open about this. We need to not destroy the economy for the sake of prospectively fighting something that we don't know how is going to play out. And he made reasonable points. I mean, our economy is devastated right now. If you keep the government shutdown of the economy going for another few months, we might not have an economy to come back to in next year if we're shut down for a whole year. And I think that he was just pushing back, saying, hey, look, you're a doctor, you're one doctor, you're not the end-all be-all. There are other doctors that disagree with you, which is true. I mean, Dr. Fauci has a position, other doctors have a different position, yet it seems like he's the one. He's the the master of the universe when it comes to whether we shut the government down, whether the government shuts down the economy or not, and that's the problem.
But I find weird about Dr. Fauci, and I'm not saying he doesn't know what he's doing, although, you know, it's best guess when it comes to coronavirus since this is new, is that his claim to fame is he led the charge back starting in the 80s for an AIDS vaccine. You know, there is no AIDS vaccine. He didn't achieve his goal. It's a testament to just how hard it is to come up with a vaccine. But he is known. I don't even know what to analogy to make that. He led the charge to cure cancer. Well, there's no cure for cancer right now. So your biggest claim to fame, what gives you all of this credibility, what imbues you with this holier than thou aura that the media thrusts upon you, is that you didn't succeed in your goal. Now, I don't think that is that he didn't succeed in his goal. It's very difficult to create a vaccine, but nowhere else does maybe Stacey Abrams, nowhere else does somebody fail at what they're known for and suddenly achieve cult status. But this guy is like, he can't take a bath, Dr. Fauci, because he walks on water. He can't sink in it. Have you ever seen anything like this?
Al Gore. This is a good example. He's a pretty much a failure when it comes to that. But I think one of the things with Fauci is that, you know, I think people get a bad rap if they dare to criticize him. It's as if you're a denier and you're, you know, some conspiracy theorist. They make it into just a choice of you're with him or against him, when the more reasonable position is, yeah, I mean, he's been great and he's been doing some great things and he's trying to do what he can to keep people safe, but he's not always right. You know, he's made mistakes and he's human. And I think any reasonable person hears him talking about keeping schools shut down through the fall, and they think that's a bit too much. And, you know, he doesn't know what's going to happen next fall. He can't see that far in the future. And I just think people think that that's crazy, and it's not gonna happen. I mean, there's no way we can continue this through the fall.
Well, you can't. Your kids are old enough to be screaming and yelling in the background. And my kids are upstairs watching Frozen for the 3 trillionth time. So I can handle it. My kids aren't going to school either way. But it really is. it's dangerous that so many politicians and so many, well, I guess I can't say the experts, but definitely the politicians who are not experts, decidedly not experts, winning an election does not give you divine inspiration into knowledge that you heretofore did not have. It is, you're just a person. But they make these pronouncements, these absolutist pronouncements, with no seeming concern for the impact of those decisions. They have a vote. That's the difference. When AOC goes off, last night she was on Instagram folding her laundry and ranting about just about anything, it's fine. It's just a nice looking dumb chick on social media folding her laundry. But then you realize she has a vote. She has a voice. She has a say in what you or I have to do ultimately. And it brings it down to a new level of danger. Nobody voted for Fauci. Nobody voted for Birx. There is this disconnect between Birx and Fauci, and Fauci said yesterday that undoubtedly, now again, the man of science, when you use undoubtedly, that means my best guess, or I'm guessing, or I assume, but it's a smart way. It's the thesaurus version of I guess. But undoubtedly, he has, you know, knowledge that I don't, but he said undoubtedly, the death total is higher than we're hearing, because there are deaths that we haven't counted. Yet, Dr. Birx, over the weekend, was quoted as saying that she believes that the numbers from the CDC, she can't trust numbers from the CDC, that the death total may be inflated by as much as 25%, which is a pretty damn big total, 25%. They don't even seem to agree on anything yet, or on very important things, yet one is treated as though he is God. He took the human form to testify yesterday, but most of the time he hangs out in burning bush form, carving his decrees into stone tablets. We are in a dangerous position here as a country, and you feel free to jump in anytime you want to try to correct me on this, but we are in a dangerous position in this country where we're not going to become a theocracy. But we could become a pseudo-theocracy based on the pronouncements of people that they're making about the future. Now, if Dr. Fauci were a soothsayer able to see into the future, he would be a multiple lottery winner. That would be his business. He wouldn't even have to buy the tickets himself. He could just say, give me a piece, and he'd give somebody the winning lottery numbers. To the best of my knowledge, he is not. But so much of what government already does in economic forms, and you know this from working in the Senate, is based on the promise of projections, right? This is going to cost X amount of dollars. This is going to create X amount of jobs. This is going to do it. We do it and we say, oh, all right, well, that sounds great, because who doesn't want a bunch of jobs for this simple little thing? Then it is signed with the presidential pen and it doesn't pan out. Just from a you're shaking your head. From a projection point of view, how good is government or any expert at predicting the future?
Horrible. Horrible. I mean, you see repeatedly when the Congressional Budget Office makes projections on how much something's going to cost, they're always wrong. They're inevitably, they get it wrong here, they get it wrong there. And sorry about that. But, you look at that and you look at, the tax bill. I mean, remember when the tax bill was passed, it was projected to cost, you know, they say it costs money, even though it's our money, what, $1.2 trillion over 10 years. Now, where do they get this number from? They make it up. I mean, it's not a real number. And when you actually look at the taxes, how much money's coming in, it's totally different because circumstances change and the projections, for the most part, sometimes are based on flawed assumptions. I think we're seeing a lot of the same right now. I mean, think about the projections, how wildly they keep changing. I mean, the government one day is telling us we're going to have a maximum of 60 or 70,000 deaths. Well, we've exceeded that. I mean, they just don't know. And for somebody like Fauci and Birx, you know, they're both right in one sense. You know, you have Fauci saying, oh, it's an undercount. Well, we know for a fact that there are people that have died from it that haven't been counted. But she's right, too, when she said, Dr. Birx says that there's an overcount because people who are coming in sick and test positive, they're counting them as, you know, or somebody who comes in with a respiratory problem that looks like COVID-19, they're counting them as somebody who died from COVID-19 when they don't really know. So they're both, you know, the numbers, we just don't know. I mean, it really, we're in a situation where science is as good as it can be, but there's no way for them to know what's going to happen in 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, because we've never experienced this before. And the problem is that we're taking every word they say and every projection they say and everything they say that is based on what they know now as if it's going to happen, because we trust the scientists. It's almost like I always make a joke every 4 years that, oh, we trust the pollsters. They're always, you know, right up until Election Day, we're like, oh, look, Trump's going to lose. Or, you know, back in 2000, you know, we saw that, oh, you know, the race is over. It's projected. We have exit polls that said that that Al Gore won the race. And, you know, people were taking that as gospel for moments. And then all of a sudden it didn't happen. And then the next day after the election, we say, why did we trust those pollsters? They were so wrong. And they're so wrong every election. But then we keep going back and trusting them again. I feel like we're doing that a lot with these scientists, because you naturally want to trust the scientists. You naturally want to trust a doctor, but they just have no idea. I mean, there's no way for them to know what's going to happen in a month, 2 months. It's just insanity that we're putting so much trust in them and basically shutting down the government on projections that may be wrong.
They're ceding governmental power and governmental leadership, and we see this struggle constantly. I've talked about it on the show endlessly. The press and the president and the governor. The president says, I'm going to order out the governor, open the country back open soon. And the press says, you can't order the states to reopen. You have no authority to do that. And he says, you're right. I'm going to put out guidelines that show this is how states should do it. And then as states are reopening, they're saying, my God, Mr. President, why are you allowing this to happen? These states are taking these awful risks. Meanwhile, they don't know whether or not they're risks or not, or how it's going to work out. They expect the president to do all things every time, unless they don't want him to do something. It was testing. We must have test. We can't reopen until we have 330 million tests performed every single day, a couple of times a day. And then we're now leading the world in testing. And Weijin Zhang of CBS News the other day says, Mr. President, you just keep talking about how good we're doing on testing. What does that matter? Why are you bragging? Why is this a competition to you? And it's like, you fucking idiot. This is not make up your damn mind. Pull your head out of your ass, wash your hair, and take a look around. What side are you on? And I honestly don't know what side these people are on, but watching that hearing today and the snippets that I was and the bits I was able to see, first of all, it's very bizarre to see a Senate or even House, any congressional hearing conducted remotely. Was that not weird to you?
Very strange.
I've sat Rand in
Paul
on them.
There, Rand Paul was actually in the Senate asking questions when you had the chairman of the committee in Tennessee and you had Fauci at home and all the witnesses were sitting at home like in their on their couch. I don't know where they were, but
it was very bizarre. Well, the senator, who's the chairman of the committee?
Lamar Alexander,
he apparently his staffer was exposed or came down positive, so he's self-isolating. That's why he wasn't home. But Elizabeth Warren was up in Massachusetts. It's very, very bizarre. So they're actually making the argument that you can vote remotely, are they not, holding these hearings remotely?
Yeah. I mean, I'm very uncomfortable with remote hearings, remote voting and all that, but it seems like we're going that direction. I'm just not a big fan. I think you've already criticized me for this before, but I am all about them being forced to come to town, because if you're going to have your leaders lead and show up and draft a $3 trillion, I mean, they're drafting a bill that's going to cost us maybe $3 trillion, which is a massive amount of money. This year, we already have racked up between $3 and $4 trillion in debt in 1 year, which is staggering. We're over $25 trillion in debt as a nation. Yet they want to just all do it from home and remotely and, you know, mail it in basically and just not be part of the process. They should fly them in a military jets, make them, you know, they can stay in some safe place, safe zone, but they need to show up and actually do their jobs, because the president is. And if you're in Congress, you can't just show up, vote, and then leave and come back in 2 months. That's not what we elected them to do. I know it's dangerous, but it's kind of their job.
I'm all in favor of them coming back, forcing them to come back, because I know it makes them wildly uncomfortable. So, you know, anything that makes them wildly uncomfortable, Republican or Democrat, I am in favor of. Before we get off the topic of the hearing with Fauci and the other experts, and notice, even I'm sitting here saying Fauci and the others. I'm treating them like the professor and Marianne on the first season of Gilligan's Island, where they were just, and the rest in the theme song. But this really is the Fauci show. He has... Have you seen a, can you recall, because I've been racking my brain about this, can you recall any other official, maybe Vindman or somebody, but not to this degree, built up to such a degree that the media acts as though he poops gold and it smells like roses, no matter what he says, and they ignore when he says, you know, the president is following my advice. And they focus and drill down on any sort of minor could-be disagreement. But have you seen anybody built up beyond God the way Fauci has been?
One person. Greta Thunberg.
little Greta Thunbergler. Leave her alone.
How dare you?
I love how she donated $100,000 to coronavirus, some coronavirus cause, which is great. You know, give your money if you got it to whatever cause you want. But that this high school dropout, I mean, can we just be honest? She's not even a protesting. She's a high school dropout. It's been two years since she's been to high school. She's dropped out. This high school dropout has $100K to give away. What kind of pile of money is she sitting on that she has $100K to give away? And you're going to try to tell me that this isn't about the money. This isn't about give me a
break. She's making a ton of money.
She's making a lot
of money.
She is. You think she could get a hairstylist to come in and maybe do something with that knot on her head? But that's beside the point. I want to talk about this $3 trillion. It's a budget. It's not even a bailout bill. It's called the HEROES Act. Right. And Democrats wrote this. We're going to talk about that because Democrats wrote this on their own. No Republicans whatsoever were consulted at all. I don't know that they would have wanted to be a part of this because it is so egregious. It's so terrible. But that Nancy Pelosi, what did it tell you about this, that Nancy Pelosi didn't bother to even try to reach out to Republicans?
Well, I mean, it tells you that this is a messaging document. I mean, there's no way Democrats can draft up a $3 trillion bill and think that the Senate's going to pass it over a filibuster, that the president's going to sign it with all the stuff that they jammed in there. And this is a massive bill, over 1,000 pages, you know, projected to cost $3 trillion. People are still leafing through it to figure out all the things that are in there. But it's just an amazing amount of money. I mean, you think about $3 trillion in one bill, it would be the biggest bill in the emergency bill in the history of our country, exceeding the last one they did, what, 2 months ago or a month ago.
Even adjusted for inflation, like nothing has come close. World War II didn't cost this much money.
Right.
But here we are now with this. And I don't want to get into the specifics, but first, I got to tell you about ExpressVPN. Being stuck at home these days, you probably don't think much about your internet privacy on your home network, right? Fire up incognito mode on your browser and no one can see what you're doing, right? You're wrong. Even in incognito mode, your online activity can still be traced. Even if you clear your browsing history, your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. That's why when I'm at home, I never go online without using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN makes sure that your ISP, your internet service provider, can't see what sites you visit. Instead, your internet connection is routed through ExpressVPN's secure servers. Each ExpressVPN server has an IP address that's shared among thousands of users. That means everything you do is anonymous. It can't be traced back to you. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your data with the best in-class encryption, so your information is always protected. Use the internet with confidence from your computer, your tablet, your smartphone, whatever you got. ExpressVPN has you covered on every device. Simply tap one button and poof, You're invisible. You're protected. ExpressVPN is the fastest, most trusted VPN on the market. It's rated number one by CNET, Wired, The Verge, and countless more. So protect your online activity today with VPN that I trust to secure my privacy. Visit my special link at expressvpn.com/caller, and you get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/caller, expressvpn.com/caller to learn all about it. Okay, Brian, $3 trillion. What are some of the more egregious things that you've known? First of all, I want to point out what Manu Raju of CNN, he was the one who was called a liberal hack by Senator McSally out of Arizona, caused a big controversy. They were all wildly upset. Not that the charge was inaccurate. The charge was wildly accurate.
Like him. He's not a bad guy.
He's like 4 feet tall, isn't he?
He's a little taller than that. He's a good guy.
But that doesn't mean he's not a left-wing hack.
I think that whole network has just gone so crazy, they just can't help themselves. I think if you don't tote the line over there, you're not going to get ahead. You know, MSNBC back in the day was a liberal network. Now they're the far left network, and CNN is a liberal network.
Well, they seem to be moving towards the MSNBC model very quickly. Manu Raju is reporting that even though there's a lot of objections on the right, and those are justified, and we're going to get to those in a second, there are still objections on the left to a $3 trillion bill. A letter from Premier Jayapal and Congressman Mark Pocan, the Progressive Caucus leaders. They've asked for the House, this is amazing, 1,815 pages, I think, this Heroes Act is. And they're going to vote on it on Friday. That's the plan. Well, yeah. The Progressive Caucus, the House Progressive Caucus, is asking for a delay in that vote until next week. Not because they're concerned about what's in the bill, not because they want to have time to read it and understand it like you would hope that leaders would. No. They're not interested in that. They're pissed off that their priorities were left out. Now, a lot of their priorities are in there, but they want even more things. According to Manu Raju, one of the objections of the Progressive Caucus in the House is that, quote, the bill doesn't include a plan to cover 100% of workers' wages up to $90,000 per year, nor does it have recurring direct payments through the duration of the crisis, meaning they want government to pick up people's salaries or out of work up to $90,000 a year and continue to send money like the stimulus checks that almost everybody got and garbage like that. Now you're talking about a $3 trillion bill already that isn't paying what? The 30 million people are unemployed. You got to assume 30%, maybe 20% are making $90,000 a year or more. Yeah. So how many more trillions of dollars is that going to throw into the fire here? And that's their objection. The $3 trillion isn't enough.
Right. So this bill has up to $1,200 in direct payments, much like the last bill had. Now, what the Progressive Caucus wants is they basically want a universal basic income where the government would issue these cards that people would get, and you would get $1,000 every month, and you would get it every month until well after the coronavirus crisis has subsided. But it's basically a camel's nose under the tent for the universal basic income forever. Because if you ever were to actually set up that program where everybody keeps getting $1,000 every month, it's never going to go away. I mean, the way that they would do it, the cute way they would do it is say, oh, we're only doing it for the coronavirus. So it would score as maybe going for 6 or 7 months. But we know once you set up a program like that, it never, ever goes away. So the progressives want to basically go with the universal basic income and provide a way that we'll, you know, the unemployment will get even worse because nobody will ever have a motivation to ever go back to work because they're just going to get free money from the government.
Right. We've already seen that. I've done story after story of small business owners who own a coffee shop or a hair salon or restaurant where they say, I got the small business loan, the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program. And thank God it was a godsend. I was able to keep my employees on the payroll. And then they come to find out that their employees are pissed off that they're kept on the payroll because if they had been laid off, they would have gotten unemployment, which is roughly, say, 2/3 of their pay, plus an additional $600 a week from the federal government. So they would, in theory, be making more money, especially lower income workers would be making more money than they had previously been making. So there are people out there who are pissed off that they've been able to keep their job through this. There are other people who are refusing to go back to work when their employer gets these PPP loans or go back on the payroll because they're making more money. The government, I don't know. It's the logic is, to me, it strikes me like the Titanic. It hits the iceberg. The right side is now just gushing water into it. And their solution is, well, let's blow a hole in the left-hand side and that'll let the water out. Like, that's not how it works.
But no, that's not how it works at all.
That's the level of sophistication.
You're absolutely right. I mean, they have provided an incentive in these bailout bills and these CARES Act and all the bills that they keep passing for people not to work because they're going to make more money if they're unemployed. And so you're giving money basically to corporations to keep people working, but they want to get laid off because they're going to make more money if they are laid off. It just creates perverse incentives where the government is throwing money all over the place. They don't really know what they're doing. We've seen all the horror stories about the top 25 colleges with billions in endowments getting bailed out. We saw what happened with the Kennedy Center getting money and just some of the ridiculous, you know, Shake Shack getting bailed out. It wasn't the little guys. It wasn't Main Street that got bailed out. I mean, a lot of it was a problem with the fact that they did it so fast that they had a hard time prioritizing in the right way where it got to the people that really needed it. And that's, you know, that's going to happen with this bill. I mean, this bill is going to be the same thing if it passes. I mean, my question is this really intended to pass? Are the Democrats really putting this out there to pass it? Or is it 100% a messaging document to say, oh, you know, Trump administration hates people, doesn't want them to get any more aid. They're going to load it up with garbage so that Republicans can't stomach it so they can use it as a political issue this fall.
Would the Democrats write an 1,815-page messaging document meant to be catnip to the media?
Yes, and they did it in the last time. Remember when McConnell was drafting up his version of the CARES Act, Pelosi sent over a bill that's very similar to this, smaller, but it had a lot of the same elements that was intended to kind of push back and get some of her priorities in it, and that worked. Now what they're doing is they're just sending over a $3 trillion massive bill as a messaging document.
One of the things that is included in this bill is the repeal of the $10,000 limit on the SALT, the state and local tax deduction. The Democrats love to talk, well, the Republicans just want to cut taxes for the rich. The Democrats only care about the rich. That's all. Oh, they're just the party of the wealthy. There is nobody who would benefit more than this than wealthy liberals living in San Francisco, living in New York. The SALT, for people who don't understand, is you used to be able to deduct your state and local income taxes from your federal income taxes, and there was no limit on it. You'd save a ton of money on your federal income taxes by basically saying, I gave it the office, I've already paid these other taxes, so don't tax me on that money. The tax cut bill of 2017 did away with that. That hurt, if you can say that, high tax blue states, and helped states like Florida, Texas, that have no or low state income taxes. And that the left has never gotten over that. They love tax hikes on everybody, but for some reason, when it came to the idea of their constituents paying more, they didn't like it. And it wasn't really their constituents paying more. Their federal income taxes were not going up. Their federal income tax rate was actually reduced. But they then were no longer inoculated or vaccinated, if you will, against the overbearing high tax governors in blue states. That's how California and New York was able to get these ridiculously high 10-12% income tax rates on high income earners, because they say, well, but you'll save the money or a good chunk of the money when it comes to your federal income taxes. So we're not really charging you 12% in California. We're really only charging you like 5, 6, 7%. So I don't see what your problem is. Well, the Trump tax cuts did away with that and exposed, laid bare the raping of the wealthy and successful by liberals in blue states. And they have hated that ever since. Is there an appetite, you think, for the Democrats control the House? They could, the House could actually pass this bill, but to revisit the idea of inoculating. And have I described the situation wrong?
You're absolutely right. I mean, this is the reason why it was taken off the books, because there was an incentive for states like New York and California to keep taxes really high, because there was no punishment. People weren't going to leave the state because they weren't paying higher taxes. They were just deducting it from their federal taxes. And it created a situation where you had low tax states and localities with low taxes getting punished. They were sending more money to Washington than states with high taxes. It basically provided an incentive for states and localities to have massively high taxes, because people weren't going to leave. They were going to stay there. It wasn't a big deal. But you're right. I mean, you're right, and it's outrageous. And here's the thing. I don't think that the Republicans are going to swallow it, because while you have the Democrats saying we want salt, they are refusing the president's one request for a payroll tax holiday, a payroll tax cut that would actually incentivize people to go back to work. And that's something that the Republicans want to do. They want a payroll tax relief. They want a short-term payroll tax relief that will incentivize people to work longer hours, because the more they work, they're going to pay less in taxes. The payroll taxes will be lower, and that is a good thing for the economy in the short term. Yet the Democrats say, no, we can't do that, but yes, we're going to basically blow up the budget with this by repealing SALT.
Another thing, another little nugget tucked into this bill from Nancy Pelosi is all kinds of incentives for illegal aliens. Essentially, it's amnesty. No one is, everybody in the country, including illegal aliens, is given health coverage for coronavirus, and no one can be deported who is seeking any social service. It gives amnesty to employers of illegal aliens. It really is, it's backdoor amnesty, because this virus isn't going to go away. So the duration of this virus is forever. It's just a nice, polite way of putting it. Is there an appetite for anything? I mean, what the hell is wrong with these people? Their priorities. This, every once in a while, people show you their priorities. And Democrats are showing their priorities in that their priorities are not American citizens. They are, you got California giving out $75 million in debit cards to illegal aliens to help them through this tough time, taking money from Americans to give it to illegals. Where do they think this appeals to? I get Democrats are very sympathetic to illegals, but this sympathetic, you think they're this sympathetic?
I think this is 100% messaging. I mean, they know that the Trump administration wouldn't sign a bill that had those provisions in it. So it has.
But how does this help them? Does this not help Trump ultimately, when you can say you're trying to do something, you want to do something to help the American people, and you've got a giant slice of this in there for illegal aliens?
Well, I mean, I think what they are pushing for is every single element in you know, all of the elements of the Democratic Party, all of the support mechanisms, you know, they got to throw some red meat to the progressives, and they need to keep the progressives on board. And so this has everything to do with keeping the Democratic base happy with what they're doing, nothing to do with the general election strategy. And the only thing that they will pull from this is a talking point saying, ooh, look, it was $3 trillion bill to help out, make America, put America back on its feet after the coronavirus. And then they'll just tick off all the things in the bill that were in the bill that they think are popular. You know, everybody getting a check, whether it be $1,000 every month, you know, universal basic income, or $1,200, you know, the stimulus check. You know, you look at the hazard pay for some essential workers, more coronavirus testing, which everybody supports. But, you know, they're just throwing all this stuff in the bill for talking points. This is a talking point bill that they're generating right now. And part of it is to keep their base happy. I mean, they're going to have the progressives up in arms if they do something that doesn't have provisions like that in it.
there is an argument, rumblings on the right, mostly from the Rand Paul wing, but even from the White House to a certain extent, that the push to do another CARES Act, which is what the heroes, God, I love the way they come up with, is there a special committee? Is there somebody on staff to come up with the worst acronyms or the most misleading acronyms ever? It's the HEROES Act. How can you vote against the HEROES Act? Do you hate heroes? And they're like, well, there's $25 billion in there for a bailout for the post office. So that's how I can vote against this. Or there's amnesty for illegal aliens. That's how I can vote against this. They always come up with these names that are so misleading and such garbage.
Like, and the Violence Against Women Act. How can you be against that? Are you for violence against women? I mean, it's bill after bill, the Environmental Protection Act, stuff like that, you know? Clean Water Act.
Oh, yeah. What do you hate the Clean Water Act? Well, because it gives $20 trillion to you know, liberal billionaires. Oh, no. Don't worry about that. You hate clean water. But there is some kind of grumbling. Even Mitch McConnell has paid lip service to this, that we don't, let's wait and see how what we've done so far goes. I mean, we have, well, the last bill was the CARES Act was $2.2 trillion. And there was the supplemental that was almost $600 billion on top of it. So you're already approaching $3 trillion that is thrown out there, not to mention the $4 trillion or whatever it is that the Fed ends up publishing and throwing out there. That money isn't gone. That money isn't spent yet. Now, the people who just got $1,200 from the government and that's it, that money's probably gone.
Yeah.
This bill and no bills are trying to, I don't know what the math was, but somebody had tweeted out, I don't know if this is correct, but it sounds believable, that a $3 trillion bill based on per household in the country is about $10,000 per household.
Now, yeah, I mean, how many do we have? 350 million people, something like that in the country you're talking about?
Yeah, but then the number of households, you know, because we've got four people that live in this house. You have five people that live in your house.
Yeah.
So you divide that down and divide that down and you divvy this up and it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $10,000 per house.
Right.
It would be much more palatable just to say, here's 10 grand per household. Right. I mean, if you really want to help the people, if that was your only objective, which it isn't for either party, but it definitely isn't for Democrats. If you wanted to do something like that, you would just say, here's the number of households, we're divvying it up, or here's the number of people and we're divvying it up and children count less or whatever. But you could do that. Why doesn't, it's a simple solution. I mean, I'm not saying it's a good one, but it's very simple. Well, why would you not do that?
It might be better than what they did. I mean, look what they did. They passed this massive bill. As you said, you know, I mean, the numbers are just staggering, but $2.5 trillion when you add everything together. And what happened? We have, maybe 20% unemployment? I mean, you know, some of the numbers haven't even been added in. You have instances where people are still trying to collect unemployment and file for it, and they can't do it because they can't even do it because the government is so overloaded with requests. So we have a massive unemployment problem. We have, you know, negative growth. So all this money that was thrown out there doesn't seem like it's working all that well. I mean, it's really, when you have government just throwing money out there willy-nilly, you're hoping that it'll maybe cushion the blow a little. And I agree, we need to wait and see, because maybe this was a complete mess. Maybe cutting checks to Americans for $1,200, you know, maybe helped out for a week or two, but maybe it wasn't the right thing to do. Maybe this PPP program didn't actually keep people on the payroll and keep people working. Maybe the small business money never actually made it to small businesses. It went to Ruth's Chris and all these other big companies and hedge funds that were kind of sneaking into the program. So I have much sympathy, and I agree with the members that are going to end up voting no on whatever comes up, because they can say credibly, we already spent an immense amount of money, trillions and trillions of dollars, trying to help people. Why are we going to throw good money after bad if it didn't work? And if we don't know if it is going to work?
Yeah, that's a logical argument. Do logical arguments win in Congress these days? Do they win in Washington?
No, because the fear factor happens. You have all these members saying, oh, no, if I don't vote. I mean, look what happened. The CARES Act. It was a massive, ridiculously huge bill. I mean, we set up a program that basically enabled the Fed to throw $4 trillion out there in loans. I mean, it was money that was given to the Fed to set up this program with no oversight at all. And no senators, I'm sure there were senators, had they shown up, would have voted no, but zero senators voted no on it. And then the House, there weren't enough Republicans to stand up with Thomas Massie and actually get a recorded vote on it when it's one of the most important votes these members of Congress will take in their whole careers. And they couldn't even, you know, you couldn't even muster a couple no votes on something like this. Because they're all terrified of an ad being run against them saying, oh, you know, we're in one of the biggest crises of our life with this coronavirus. And what did your member do? He voted no to get you some help. They're terrified of the politics of it when rationally it may not have been the right thing to do.
But Mitch McConnell is up this year. Mitch McConnell, as he always does, is facing a tough challenge. The Democrats would love to get his scalp. It like porn to them, the idea of getting Mitch McConnell. Does he have the political capital and the political will to stand up to this crap?
Well, he does to this new bill. I mean, this new bill, I think the Republicans can make a credible case that we've done a lot. And now we're facing a debt crisis. You know, if we continue to, I mean, the fact that we hit $25 trillion in debt in record time, I mean, we hit $25 trillion really fast because of this year. This year, it's just the debt skyrocketed. I think Republicans can credibly say, hey, hold on there. Maybe we can do a relief package, but let's wait another month. Let's wait another 2 months, but we're not going to pass this Nancy Pelosi messaging bill, this $3 trillion FDR style bill that just throws money in every direction possible for the, you know, that are all Democratic priorities. Like, why would Republicans allow that to happen? They're not gonna. And Democrats aren't gonna negotiate in good faith. They're not gonna give the president anything he wants. He's not getting his payroll tax relief. He's not gonna get what he wants in this bill. And the things that he doesn't want in this bill, the Democrats aren't gonna take out. So this is gonna be a political fight that they'll probably come to loggerheads.
Wait a second. Do you think that Nancy Pelosi has actually secretly no desire for a third bill?
Well, she can pass whatever she throws out on the floor.
Right. But passing in the House is a small part of the battle. It has to be signed by the president. You think her objective is to pass something in the Senate that is deliberately never going to become law and never, ever work with anything? Like, there's no end product. There is no negotiation. There is no middle ground. There is no compromise. She just wants to be able to say, Republicans are stopping you from getting all these goodies.
She wants to preserve that possibility. She's putting out a bill that's so out there that she's preserving the possibility of saying, look, we did everything we could. These Republicans are unreasonable. They wouldn't accede to our demands. But she's also put out a bill that is something that she knows can't pass the Senate, but she knows that it gives her negotiating power if this lasts for a long time. If Republicans get in a situation where they have to negotiate, they have to pass something, they're going to have to include some of this stuff. So it's win-win for her. She either gets to blame Republicans for not passing anything, or she's put out a bill that she can say, if I don't get X, Y, and Z out of the bill I sent over, you're not going to get anything out of the House. We're never going to take your bill up.
Surely your little dwarf buddy at CNN, Manu Raju, would report on such a strategy, would he not? I can't believe that he would let that slide.
I'm a bad guy because I like Manu Raju.
At least you admit it, Brian.
Yes.
Lastly, before we end the show, there have been a lot of reports lately that you are the biggest sports nut I know. You play every sport you can, and you're in every freaking list the sports.
NASCAR's coming up this weekend. NASCAR. It's starting back up.
I don't consider NASCAR a sport. I consider it a contest. It's different. There's no, I guess there's some skill involved, but not a lot. It's about what they did in the pits and what they did building the car than it is more than whether or not you crash it into the wall.
I tell you, you go to one race, you will immediately become a fan. It's pretty awesome.
Then I'll never become a fan. Watching guys go in a circle. I could watch my kids run in a circle. I just got to play a Frozen song, and they run around in a circle. But list just quickly for the audience the various sports that you play fantasy versions of, or do fantasy, whatever. You don't play fantasy sports. You do fantasy sports. Is there actually probably a shorter list to list the sports you aren't in a fantasy world? You don't do NBA.
No, I do fantasy hockey. I do fantasy football. I do fantasy baseball. I do fantasy NASCAR. I do fantasy Premier League soccer.
Do you even watch Premier League soccer?
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. It's. Okay. I mean, obviously they're not playing it right now, but
I watch it too. I just didn't know that you watched that.
Oh, it's so great. I mean, Saturday mornings, if you want to watch live sports, that's what you watch. I mean, that's, you wake up, you throw it on, and it's
so
live.
So much better than Bundesliga and so much better than Major League Soccer here. It's just something more exciting.
Oh, Major League Soccer is just garbage. But the funny thing is that the Bundesliga is actually starting up this weekend, which means maybe Premier League will come back in some form in a couple weeks, because Italy and the French have already shut down their league for the year, but we'll see what happens. But I love European soccer. I like the Premier League. That is a fun league to watch. And, you know, other than that, I guess, you know, the Champions League is pretty cool too.
But they're talking about coming back. Major League Baseball owners have come up with a proposal to the players to do baseball with no fans. The NHL is looking for a way to salvage the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is doable. That's more condensed. You can do that inside of, you know, 3-4 weeks, do a quick playoff. So if you have to sort of quarantine the players just amongst players and keep out the wives, the girlfriends, and the prostitutes, you could probably do that. But others, Major League Baseball is concerned because some, like Canada, isn't opening up. So they're maybe playing in Florida and Arizona, where they do their spring training. Would you watch? I know you'd watch.
Of course I would.
But do you think that there is how different and how successful do you think fanless sports will be?
Well, I've actually watched a little bit of the
Korean League baseball?
No, the MMA. Oh, Korean League is, yeah, it's pretty brutal to watch. But the fighting, you know, the you watch them without fans. It takes a lot out of it. But you know what? It'd be kind of fun to see them for one season reorganize all the divisions. You're going to see teams play other teams that have never played, you know, have played each other, but don't play each other very much. You know, NHL with a condensed schedule, a playoff schedule, even if there are no fans, it's going to be hard not to watch. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to be as exciting, but it'll be kind of fun to watch. I mean, just for this one year, because it gives us something. It's better than nothing. It's not great, but it's better than nothing.
I think there's a great opportunity here for the NHL. NHL is the least popular of the major sports. If the NHL can get their act together and figure out how to get something going before any of the other major sports do,
yeah,
people will watch just because it's the only sport. So basketball fans, football fans, baseball fans, who wouldn't watch hockey if you paid them to, would watch hockey. So in that sense, playoff hockey, there is nothing like it. Sudden death overtime is the greatest thing in sports.
Yeah.
And it only exists in, I think the NFL should go to play till somebody wins. And if you start an overtime quarter, you have to finish it and there are no ties. I think that would make the game much more interesting. But
I'm anti-NFL ties. I think it's ridiculous they still have them.
It is. But it's so infrequently an issue. But when it is, you're just like, wait, what happened? Who's the loser here? Because, speaking of soccer, they get excited over there. 0-0, 90 minutes. 90 minutes of soccer, and then an extra half an hour or whatever of soccer, and there's no score whatsoever, and people are cheering, and they leave the stadium. Leave that excitement in Europe.
Yes.
But I think that they could, like baseball, we have technology now, and I talked about this on my radio show yesterday. We have the technology now where we can project ads onto the field. We can project the line on the football field. They can do all sorts of graphics in real time on the screen. There's really no reason we couldn't project fans into the stands for the video and crowd noise, pump in crowd noise. to make it not so jarring, because I have watched just a teeny weeny bit of that Korean baseball, and it's weird. And I remember the game in Baltimore a couple years ago after the Freddie Gray riots, where there were no fans whatsoever. And it's jarring to see. And in a time when we need sports to come back to help return some semblance of normalcy and sanity to a lot of people who are having a tough time isolating, I'm not sure that empty stadiums are going to help with that. It's like, here's an escape from the horror of coronavirus quarantine that just beat you over the head with coronavirus quarantine is the way to go. And there are all kinds of sponsors out there. You could have, instead of the Bat Boy, you have the Purell Boy. And he comes out, he wipes down things down. And Stick'Em is also a disinfectant. You know, brought to you by Lysol. And there are plenty of opportunities out there for sponsorships.
I love it. I love it. The Purell guy would be great. You'd make a lot of money. Just a squirt of Purell for like 50 cents, that guy would kill. Make so much money.
Depending if they swung at the first pitch while their hands were still dripping with Purell, the bats would go flying everywhere. Instead of a spit ball, you've got a disinfectant ball.
That's right. Does all good. Ball.
Get on this, corporate America. Let's make this, because they're talking about the players got to sort of take a little cut, a pay cut, right? Because they haven't had the season. The players' unions have all the leverage on that one, because most of these contracts are guaranteed, so it doesn't really matter. They got to pony up the money either way. But there seems like all sorts of sponsorship possibilities out there for corporate America, the official mask of Major League Baseball, the hydroxychloroquine could probably sponsor a team. Let's get this show on the road.
There you go.
But we'd watch it no matter what, because the alternative is watching Tiger King another time. And you notice Tiger King is sort of gone now. It's done. You watched Tiger King, right?
It was overrated. I liked it, but I'm definitely not going to watch it a second time. It was okay.
There isn't a single redeeming person in the whole documentary. And if they all went to jail, I think the world would be a better place. Just a little.
Agreed.
Brian Darling, president of Liberty Government Affairs, friend of mine, golf partner. Soon we will be back out there golfing.
Yes, let's do it.
I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you guys listening. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. The interview I'm recording, I don't want to announce who the interview is with, because just in case I jinx it. But maybe I'll do that on tomorrow's show. I don't know. Anyway, tune in tomorrow. There'll be another exciting episode. Appreciate you listening. Thanks. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow.